The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe if I can find the button, who knows? Maybe the whole podcast will just be this intro. There we go. This means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another failure to launch. I mean, another Monday morning tech chat show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly named podcast series. I got to jump in immediately with some Twitch thank yous. We've got we've got Steve Q3 Becker subscribed to tier 1, and we've got McCorkerin 3 subscribed with Prime, and McCorkerin 3 writes, thankful for this podcast, tech YouTube is getting unbearable, not sure what we would do without this. We've got Rico Man 17 subscribed to tier 1, and we've got a first time chat from Jay Severino 123. Shaved Juan looks so different. I am just trying something a little different, you know, trimming things down. I like to keep kind of like a scragglier beard, which, you know, it's a new year, 2022. I thought I'd try something a little different. So just kind of cleaned it up a little bit. That's not very helpful audio commentary for those of you who are catching the podcast replay. But if you're in the live stream, you can see what a cleaned up Juan looks like. And Gadget Guy 2020, I trot this hat out quite a bit. This is my TK Bay hat. This is the TK My Bay hat. So that's my jam. And McCorkerin 3 Season 4 of Cobra Kai was kind of awesome. I very much enjoyed it. I actually blitzed the whole show, the whole season, over the weekend. So Sveticus is asking if we're going to cover some of the commentary on the Pixel 6 Pro. We're definitely going to be spending a lot of time talking Pixel 6 Pro in the gadget block. We've got some news that I want to get through first. Gadget Guy 2020 says, I look like a little boy, 5 years old. Dave, that's awesome. David says, now we can hear the lack of noise dampening from the stubble beard. I'm so echoey now that I've gotten rid of my insulation. And Gary the Fireman gifting a tier 1 sub to JMX Warrior. Again, kicking off this live stream with just a ton of love and a ton of support, and I thank you so much. All of you who are contributing and supporting and joining these conversations is why I wanted to start off with McCorkerin 3's comment, just talking about how challenging this tech conversation has gotten. We're starting off a new year. We're often looking at the excitement of getting into new tech, and it just seems so defeated right now. And I mean, there are a number of issues at play, and I can't broadly cover all of them, but it is one of the reasons why I like to host this kind of a weekly tech discussion and get back into this. And while we talk about some heavy stuff, it's also to just spend some time with people that I think are genuinely interested in trying to find use and joy and fun in this stuff. Chatty boy, Juan's looking like Lex's little brother. Oh man, that's hilarious. Oh, and we are in the middle of a hype train. So again, in all of the excitement of Twitch, which is, again, making the audio podcasting side of this a little bit more of a challenge, we got Gary the Fireman, tier one sub to Gadget Guy 2020, and we're into level two. Choo-choo, I choose you. So, just as that little bit of the intro, I hope everybody had a lovely weekend. If you're in the United States, I'm hoping you're getting some time off for Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, just as a continuing exercise in how far we've come, yet how very, very, very far we still have to go in our society, and recognizing some of the steps we've made and some of the setbacks we've suffered, and just the continued pressure, the continued exercise of improving our education, improving our infrastructure, and helping those who need help in our society, and recognizing those messages from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., especially in light of some of the recent challenges a number of these communities have faced 2 years into a global pandemic. So hopefully you've been able to take today off and spend a little time or you will get to spend some time with people you care about or who care about you. And just this is one of those days where I feel it's appropriate. It's appropriate to spend that day of remembrance just thinking about what we can all do to pitch in, because I'm definitely preaching to the choir there. Again, the list of names that I see in my chat from a variety of regions and locations and political backgrounds, and it's just always sort of filled me with a little hope that this little lunchroom table of geeks has often led by that kind of example. So thank you so much. And why don't we try and efficiently get through the show? I have a ton of news for this week, and I've got a lot of housekeeping, and that's usually where I kind of find all of my tangents and digressions and things. Anod032 gifting a tier one sub to some Gadget Guys community. Hey, gifting a tier one sub to Sveticus. This is the first gift sub that they've given. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for jumping in and supporting. That is phenomenal. And we've made it to Hype Train level 3. So, yes, lots of housekeeping, lots of news. But I want to save, like Sveticus was asking, I want to save a good chunk of our gadget block for talking about just how silly the shenanigans have been regarding the discussion of things like updates. I think we have... NVIDIA is already messing me up here. I think we've got a lot to talk about with Android 12, and then specifically the phones that are trying to run Android 12. And Dave Burns gifting a tier one sub to Bawang Bite. Man, you guys are rocking my socks. Thank you so much. So, housekeeping 5 hours. Oh, and Allgreg. So Allgreg is talking about his screen on time yesterday with the Pixel 6 Pro. I thought he was predicting how long housekeeping was going to take at 10 hours. Here, why don't we knock out housekeeping? All of the stories, all of the links, everything that we're going to be talking about today is going to be found on this week's show notes, somegadgetguide.com. Yes, let's jump in. So here, let me get this out of the way here. Two main videos, but then lots of other stuff just sort of surrounding the production of Some Gadget Guy Incorporated. I'm not in Inc., actually. So, screen sharing now. Number one, cleaning up my OnePlus 9 Pro Whitestone Dome Premium Screen Protector review. So, reviewing cases and screen protectors isn't usually my jam. I very much enjoy finding really fun, fresh accessories and talking about ways to improve the usage of our phones. But the white stone domes are near and dear to my heart because I'm absolutely terrible at following instructions. And a white stone dome kit is absolutely, IMO, the best screen protector you can put on your phone. But every single time I try to apply one, I always skip ahead, miss one critical step, or something borks. So anytime I do a white stone dome review, it's mostly to see if me personally, can actually get out of my own way to accomplish installing one. I've got one now on my OnePlus 9 Pro. It is so pretty again. I had the factory installed screen protector on the OnePlus 9 and it was looking pretty garbage. So I'm just, you know, having, you know, a nice, really clean, transparent glass screen protector on a curved screen phone. It's just super pretty. And so I maybe reached out to the Whitestone Dome folks to see if I could get my hands on a Pixel 6 Pro screen protector, because I have a TPU screen protector on the Pixel 6 Pro, and it's already looking pretty rough. Moving right along, I've got the Xperia 5 Mark III review, the little smartphone that could. And again, we could also add this to the gadget blog too if y'all have any questions about the Xperia 5 Mark III. I already had to send it back, so I've got it packed up now. I just saw from Gabaletta, but Juan, how does it feel in the hand? Oh, it feels really nice in the hand. You know, it doesn't like slice my hand open. It seems like it was designed to be used by evolved primates with opposable thumbs. So, you know, like that's good. That's good. I'll rate that positive in my review. Xperia 5 Mark III, Sony's timing could definitely have been better, but given everything we know about regional distribution and where Sony makes most of their money, honestly, at this point, I'm just happy we're getting anything from Sony. It's getting really rough out there for... right, Hype Train Level 2. Oh, let me share this. Choo-choo, hype hands. Ooh-ooh! Okay. It's getting really rough out there for, you know, United States tech enthusiasts, as more and more companies are either slow playing the United States or just sort of evading our country and our market altogether. Xiaomi doesn't really ship anything directly here. I mean, they've got some healthy imports, I bet. But OnePlus, you know, the OnePlus 10 Pro, not coming here as part of the initial launch. Sony... slow playing the United States. It's getting tough. And we've got some other news. We've got some other news on, like, what's going on with Samsung and the Exynos. And it's, yeah, I feel like if we care about good competition, we need to be very concerned. But the Xperia 5 Mark III, great phone. And I'm not too angsty about it being this late in the sort of cycle of phones, given what we know about next generation SoCs. And that Sony will probably take about another year to get us an Xperia 5 Mark IV. So it's not like you're going to buy this phone and immediately it's going to be obsolete in this market. Moving right along, we had a major, just an absolutely massive video go up on the Patreon. I didn't have it prepped for my housekeeping, but here it is now. Surface Duo 2 camera deep dive, is it worth the bulge? This video took me so long to write, and I still don't have a proper conclusion for this review. I'm absolutely torn on the question, given what the Surface Duo is as a productivity, multitasking, foldable tablet, does the addition of a camera bulge make that experience better? And I don't know if it does. You know, to spoil, you know, sort of the what little conclusion I can come to, the video's about is almost a half hour long. We do the photo analysis and the video analysis, and I took it out to shoot and low light performance and UHD and all that fun stuff. And I just can't tell. You know, it's such a niche slate. It's such a niche tablet. I don't know that the person who is really invested in what the Duo does well is as concerned about whether or not they've got the bestest content creation device. So again, it's one of those, if you're on the Patreon, it's almost a half hour long, and I would love some chatter on that, some conversation, just what are our expectations, and does this mean, what I'm hoping is that we can eventually start changing up some of the chatter about things like accessories. You know, maybe a folding phone just needs to survive with different companion accessories than a normal slate phone. Maybe normal slate phones are really going to be where we go for making videos and recording podcasts, and maybe these slates are going to be more artists and multitasking and document work, and whatever you use for one phone is going to be different than what you use for another. It's heady stuff because we're seeing this as the transition, and a lot of companies are hyping it like it's going to be the next coolest thing, but they're not the same. You fundamentally have such a different experience that what you buy to support it has to also be fundamentally different. And Raymond had to mention the LG V70, which just makes me sad. And Sammy, exactly. This is a part of the conversation, is one of the few people I know who actually put himself out there like me with the Duo 2. Sam writes, when I use my Duo 2 for pics or video, it's a very deliberately planned use, like at the auto show yesterday. Completely agree. The Duo form factor makes it one of the most deliberate devices to use for anything, which I really enjoy. Speaking of, let me get back into housekeeping, because one of the fun things that kind of dovetails with that conversation, Sam, is I was on the phones show with Steve and Ted on Saturday, and that's already published and gone live. Hopefully this is a show in your podcast catcher, because Steve Litchfield has been just such a reasonable and practical voice in mobility discussions for so long. I mean, just I've always loved his commentary. Even when I don't agree with him, I've always felt that it is a measured and considered approach to reviewing mobile devices and thinking about use over just brand fandom. And Steve and Ted, I've always loved kind of mixing it up. I joined their show on Saturday, and I feel like I did a pretty good job of not just rambling off into the extreme tangents that I usually do. So again, as another part of the housekeeping, please check that out. Just two other little bits. I'm proud of how this video came out. It's not doing super great on the reviews.org website, but I put together an NFT buyer beware. I just kind of feel the current implementation of NFTs as some kind of speculative investment tool are largely sort of misrepresenting what NFTs actually are. And I feel this is one of those hot, buzzy, buzzword, you know, fad kinds of situations where a lot of people stand to lose a lot of money because they don't understand what this technology really represents. I am very positive on the future of NFTs as something more mundane. As we get more comfortable with the technology and we play with it and we see what other applications they are, I think NFTs are going to be really cool. But they won't be exciting and you know, pump and dump, you know, investment. You know, I made so much money in this crypto NFT market. I feel like eventually we'll get to a point where they're just kind of commonplace and they interact with other services and other transactions in really novel ways. I don't believe that's what they are right now. So I made this video for reviews.org. It's a little off of my normal beat talking about broadband and telecoms and stuff, but I just kind of felt it was an important topic to bring up. And then lastly, last week, I hosted my first Twitter space, and I'm playing with the idea of making these semi-regular or regular. If you haven't heard me talk enough, here's an opportunity to hear me talk more, because, you know, my voice is so good at that kind of sustaining. But Techcrastination is the name I'm kind of flirting with. This first one was a really special sort of experience for me. It was my very first Twitter space. I was very anxious about how that would go down, and I wanted it to be just sort of an open, fun conversation or a dialogue. We kind of led into some of the conversation about Apple and iMessage and divisive business practices that target people in specific ways to make them feel excluded, how that's feeding into a culture of cyberbullying with teens. Teens are overwhelmingly buying iPhones, often because of peer pressure initiatives. And that's coming from the top of the company down. We've gotten good information from internal emails that Apple's business strategy kind of hinges on making it painful for iPhone users to interact with Android users. And there's this visceral techie debate as to whether or not, you know, Apple owes any commentary on this. And I believe that they do. I believe that they have set out to make this product as painful to use outside of their walled garden. And that means walking away from standards, walking away from interoperability, making their products more inclusive or making communication easier amongst different populations. And especially here in the United States, where we are still so heavily sort of built on SMS and MMS messaging. So in this Twitter space, there is phenomenal contributions from Viper, the man about tech, from Dr. Ian Cutress over at Anantech, from TK Bay, TK My Bay, I'm wearing his hat right now, and Board at Work and Abang Etta, as we talked about that. And then we also talked about some of the CES coverage, and it was really just lovely. It's calm, it's measured. Obviously, a lot of people don't fully agree with each other, but it didn't descend into one of those super toxic techies just yelling whataboutisms at each other. Again, in why I love doing this podcast and what that Twitter space turned out to be, and knowing that my tone can be rather confrontational, it really turned out to be a lovely and brilliantly insightful conversation. I could not have been more proud of the kind of discussion that was fostered by that community coming together to sort of struggle with some feelings regarding a kind of a toxic story. So that's all the housekeeping. It did okay. It was like a 15-minute housekeeping, and I only rambled a little bit. Matt Tyler, I'll have you know, I too am wearing TK's hat right now, so TK Our Bay. I don't know. I think I probably had his hat on before you. You know, there's no way to know. There's no way to prove it. I'm just going to make that as wild speculation. And Gabaletta, this is, again, when it comes to the individual consumer, I want to say that's fine. But if we can't acknowledge that Apple's business practices are contributing to a culture of division, then I don't feel we're properly acknowledging sort of the source of some of this angst. Gabaletta writes, I had a customer at work dismiss any Android device solely because it's not made by Apple, even if the Android device can do so much more than any iDevice. But the number one reasoning was iMessage for dismissing Android devices. And I feel like there are a number of mischaracterizations in what this and how this conversation has gone down. I've been lurking in a number of live streams and Twitter Clubhouse conversations. I really don't feel like joining them because most of the time it just turns into toxic ranting. For example, I was in one live stream, in the comments of one live stream, where the host was just going on and on about this Wall Street Journal article, completely making it out that Apple is just responsible for every kind of cyberbullying. And the article is fairly rationally constructed that this aspect of teens excluding people for using the wrong phones is largely because of this divide in a service like iMessage. And so when someone goes out of their way to completely mischaracterize what the article is saying, to me, that is an emotional defense of a company. They feel like they need to defend Apple because they're invested in Apple products and services. And they would feel like, oh no, if something I supported and sold to my family and friends as being the right fit for them were contributing to this, that would speak poorly of me. And that's not the case. It's okay to have the criticisms of a company that you've financially supported. That's the only way that company's products are gonna get better. As another quick tangent, there was a brilliant YouTube video that I should have added to the show notes, but it's from an individual. I can't remember his name now. It's somewhere in my email because I sort of linked it and shared it to myself. But he's going on about his experiences using the MacBook Pro 16, the Intel flavor of the MacBook Pro, and how Apple's most recent software updates for the MacBook Pro have tanked the performance of his laptop so bad that he went out and bought new M1 Macs. And now he's so excited. Like, look at how much faster this is. So on a whim, he took his MacBook Pro 16, he reverted the software to an older build of Mac OS, and wouldn't you know it, the performance significantly improved. Huh. How funny is that? That the first major software update sort of platform for that operating system after the M1 Max had come out tanked the performance. That would be a great way to encourage someone to upgrade a laptop that they didn't need to upgrade. Huh. How funny is that? But along the way, this individual is like, hey, yeah, so I bought the M1 and I ended up buying another M1 for my wife. And, you know, I'm going to keep those M1s and maybe I can just use this Intel Mac as something else. But I really hope Apple will get after this and improve. And you're like, I appreciate you not wanting to slam Apple, but it's exactly that kind of business practice that you're validating by continuing to buy their products and knowing that that's an artificial pressure that Apple is putting on the market there. So it's difficult. It's difficult getting around Apple as a marketing and media machine. And we got to be fair, but why do we need to be fair by sugarcoating the business practices of a $3 trillion company that time and time again, we have so much evidence to show they don't support proper standards, they purposely break their products to sell you their solutions, and they go out of their way to encourage a divisive sort of media stance. I mean, they've been doing this since the Mac versus PC ads. I mean, to be fair, when they were the little upstart company in the 1984 ad, it was Apple versus IBM, and they were the plucky upstart, and they were going to shake up things. That's cute when you really are the tiny little underdog. When you're the market leader and when you present yourself as an industry leader and the most profitable tech company on the planet, it's not cute anymore. It's actually kind of grating to still see sort of the exclusive, elitist, think different kinds of marketing coming from the company that is winning. So, sorry, that took me a little outside. There goes my decent timing on housekeeping this week. Tech loving mama, you're right. But those apples, they don't get viruses. Because we're going to be talking about that in just a minute. All right, we're going to blast through news. I'm going to keep this show to 2 hours, and we're not going to get sidetracked anymore. Like I said, all of the links are going to be on the show notes, somegadgetguy.com. All right. A number one, we've got some FCC news. I just want to bring this up because there's no momentum on it, but I think this could be a good first step in a very, very necessary conversation. The chair of the FCC, Jessica Rosenworcel, is circulating new reporting requirements for data breaches. So I'm going to be linking this as the PDF. The proposal outlines several updates to current FCC rules addressing telecommunications carriers' breach notification requirements, eliminating the current 7-business-day mandatory waiting period for notifying consumers of a breach, expanding customer protections by requiring notification of inadvertent breaches, and requiring carriers to notify the commission of all reportable breaches in addition to the FBI and the Secret Service. This is the very first step. The current rules that we have when there's a massive data breach, I think, are insufficient for protecting consumers. We can go days between you can play a shell game of like, well, we detected this breach. It was an accidental breach. We don't know how much information was leaked. We have this time frame to kind of investigate. Then we have this time frame to notify our customers that their data might have been exploited. And this would significantly narrow that kind of discovery to reporting window. There's no... This is just the proposal. So there's not even a call to a vote you know, or putting this into the proper language that you would vote on it. It's just, it's going to take some time. Oh, and hey, Zach Talks Tech. I'm sorry, I was so into my housekeeping, I didn't notice that he was jumping in too. Ba-boom. Hey, love it. And Simon says, Hypno, it wasn't a breach. It's Dominion. It does what it wants. Oh, McCorkerin 3. When you say things like this, you know, McCorkerin 3 writes, FCC news is boring. Let's argue about the notch. All right, that means I need to spend way more time talking about FCC news. In fact, maybe next week's podcast is going to be all FCC because I've got such a nerd crush on Jessica Rosenworcel. And Gary the Fireman, yeah. I hope T-Mobile is paying attention. I hope all the carriers are paying very close attention because they're cribbing everything that we do. Carriers and ISPs. Again, check out that FTC report where they broke down the insane amount of data they track. They're your gatekeepers to the internet, so every bit of data and behavior goes through their pipes. And then the incredible profitability of mining all of that data is pretty intense. And Aditya, I completely agree. Rosenworcel being the badass that she is. Heck yes. Barry Johnson, I'm going to set up a new YouTube channel, FCC News 24/7. Real news from real carriers. So Matt Tyler was in the chat. I don't know if he still is in the chat. This is just kind of an interesting one to keep an eye on because I don't know how this is going to play out. If you're a fan of BBC dramas and BBC sci-fi, Doctor Who, BBC content, this is one just to look out for. So The Guardian is reporting BBC license fee to be abolished in 2027 and funding is currently frozen. So the BBC licensing, it's this weird, archaic television license that the UK government uses to fund BBC production. And so right now, I think it's a yearly fee, I believe. It's £159, and it kind of goes up in price or sort of tags along, sort of loosely following inflation. At £159, they're going to freeze that funding until 2024, and they're going to slightly rise that fee again in 2024 until 2027, where they're going to say they're going to completely abolish the fee. Again, it just feels like it's being generated out of a lot of like political discord, not necessarily as the right play to sort of protect or to empower the consumers of BBC content. Again, under a conservative government, Dories said, this license fee announcement will be the last. The days of the elderly being threatened with prison sentences and bailiffs knocking on doors are over. Time now to discuss and debate new ways of funding, supporting, and selling great British content. Which to me seems like an overly emotional appeal that isn't accurate. I don't know, Matt. Are there roaming gangs of British toughs that are going door to door to shake down the elderly to make them pay their BBC TV licenses? Again, I'm not saying there's not a problem there or they shouldn't be investigating other business practices, but when I see commentary like that from politicians, it makes me feel that their intentions aren't necessarily jiving with their commentary. So that kind of feels a little like some of the political conversation that surrounds things like immigration or healthcare, the NHS, and how what politicians say rarely jives with the reality of how complicated those institutions are. Just putting that out there. Keep an eye on it. Hopefully, the sort of story and pacing issues and the character issues of Doctor Who are solved before 2027 so that we still have good UK sci-fi.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r/glowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Oh, and Adriana and Whip gifting a tier one sub to Barry Johnson. It's just like three awesome names in that comment right there for me to celebrate. Thank you so much for supporting. Moving right along. This is another one. We've been talking about this a lot, and I just have to keep peppering in parts of this discussion. Substantial and significant issues, combating the spread of misinformation, people who get hurt by this, the science denialism, the anti-vaxxers, the COVID misinformation campaigns. We're weaponizing bad data, and it destabilizes communities, and it destabilizes entire countries. Sorry, pause on that real quick. Adriana and Whip, tier one subs for Vazikos, Gord username, Riviera613, Kung Fu Penguin, Coppa Cash, Kenox80, Endless SC, Arxie ACNH, and Ron Sims. Whoa, thank you so much. That's amazing. That incredible. Thank you for supporting the channel. Jumping in and catching your content. Very much appreciated. Adriana and Whip also run their own Twitch stream. It's a lovely stream, and I hope everyone out here can catch it, especially for more of the Twitch style gameplay commentary. It's a really fun duo. So, getting back into this is coming from PolitiFact. Again, nothing's going to come directly from this, but if we don't keep raising the conversation and contributing to this discussion, it won't get better. So PolitiFact writes, an open letter to YouTube CEO from the world's fact checkers, and I'm not going to do a very good job of summarizing this. It is very well linked. There are citations given, but from this one paragraph that I did want to highlight, the examples are too many to count. Many of those videos and channels remain online today, and they all went under the radar of YouTube's policies, especially in non-speaking English countries in the global South. We are glad that the company has made some moves to try to address this problem lately, but based on what we see daily on the platform, we think these efforts are not working, nor has YouTube produced any quality data to prove their effectiveness. Again, it's rating YouTube by its own terms of service and its own public commitments to trying to combat the spread of misinformation and seeing how those efforts are largely inconsistent. Again, when it comes to transparency or when it comes to self-reporting, YouTube can say, hey, we're making these grand efforts to try and stop the spread of bad data. But when you try to run that through some type of third-party assessment, it rarely lives up to the claims. And we have so many issues with how to fix this problem and still encourage speech. And there aren't great solutions on either side. But that doesn't mean we give up. It doesn't mean we just throw our hands up and let whatever happen. It's that we have to keep trying and we have to keep assessing. And this is the kind of data that we need coming from outside of YouTube to see if those efforts are successful. Again, just a phenomenal write-up with tons of examples and links and data from numerous organizations that have come together to write this as an open letter. YouTube has faced some incredible challenges, and I don't know that anyone's really happy with the solutions that they've been coming up with to improve their platform. Just as another quick throw out, or shout out, throw out. No, that's not a thing. You know, let me do some throw outs real quick. Let me drink some coffee. Simon says Hypno, absolutely accurate. Unless it's covering its own arse regarding copyright strikes, YouTube doesn't care. And McCorkerin3 kind of highlighting that independent media has been dying on YouTube. YouTube is becoming the place where you get to watch wacky dances from Jimmy Fallon the night after. Woo! Not YouTube, as in the tube that you made. It's YouTube. the tube you probably don't want to watch but have on because you're supposed to be working. So, get this here. Okay, quick shout out. If you're in the United States, chances are pretty good that you've likely faced some challenges in getting your hands on a COVID test. Can confirm, I live in the United States. We had a stockpile before Omicron hit, and we've gone through a few. We still have some in case of emergency. We've got them behind a glass container. But if you go to covidtests.gov, beginning January 19th, households are eligible for 4 free at-home COVID-19 tests. Again, it's by household. So again, covidtests.gov, keep that bookmark, throw in a calendar reminder, just get them. If there's a resource to get your hands on this and you can be proactive, and you can share this with your family and friends, just get them, have them. Better to have them and not use them than to need them and not have them. So just spreading the word using what little platform I've got, and hopefully people can keep an eye out there. Again, any resource that we can help, that we can share, that we can collaborate with, I feel like this is one of those that deserves just that little bit of attention. And, you know, it's one of those things, like, if I could choose where my tax dollars went, it would be to improving health services and reporting and that kind of stuff. So there we go. covidtests.gov. Please check it out. Marie and I have back orders on COVID tests. None of them are being fulfilled right now. So, yeah, it's pretty heady out there. Yeah. So Dave Burns, Liz and I were discussing this. It is certainly better than nothing. Right now, unfortunately, for a lot of our government responses on things, a slap in the face would be better. But at least here, something, just something proactive and something that can benefit on the spread of a disease that is manifesting in a very different way than it was 2 years ago. Oh, and see, Matt, this is exactly where we were as Lex was getting back into in-person school. Matt writes, I went through 5 boxes while my missus had it, having to test every day before I finally caught it. Again, and when one person in your household starts manifesting some symptoms, especially with Omicron, it is likely that disease has been spread before you are aware that your symptoms are related to that disease. It's just really tough. And there's still so many vulnerable people in our society that we should be looking to protect. Every time someone gets this disease, it's a chance that it's going to mutate and turn into something even worse. So it's pretty rough. Oh, and Raymond, going through 2 tests and they were negative. Thanks for asking. I'm glad to hear it. Again, even from CES, like, I don't even want to get the flu if I can help it. Excuse me. I'm going to be that jerk who, in normal social situations, even when we're sort of figuring out the new social behaviors around in-person interactions, like, I don't care. I don't want to get a cold. I don't want to get the flu. I don't want anything to do with humanity because people are gross. But yes, for Dave Burns, at least help vulnerable people. And again, you guys, I'm loving the vibe here because I know y'all are the good neighbors. So we're getting to the end of the news block, and I'm glad I kind of blitzed this just a little quicker so we've got a good chunk of time left for news block to talk about this. This one kind of popped up on my radar day before yesterday. I had to share some snarky tweets about it. But this one's pretty significant. We were talking before, Apple, they don't support standards, right? You can't Bluetooth a file to an iPhone because they don't want you to support, they don't want to support you sending files to iPhones. They only want iPhones to be able to use AirDrop to send files to each other. If you have an Android phone, chances are pretty good your Mac doesn't properly support things like USB protocols for file transfers, like MTP protocols, media transfer protocols. I just said MTP protocols. It's like ATM machine. You can't just plug in a USB cable, move files back and forth, because they only want you to be able to do things like that through Apple software on an iPhone. Time and time and time again, Apple strays from what a standard should be so that they can create their own lock-in pain point to make their ecosystem seem better. But occasionally those things kind of backfire. So if you're on Safari, and I'm linking directly to the software engineer's blog who started Vocaly detailing this. There have been a number of write-ups. Other people can summarize this better, but go to the source, because the breakdown on this is pretty incredible. And it's not a difficult read if you understand anything basic about how web browsers function, which, again, I'm talking to the right people in this chat. Dave Burns will probably have some decent insight as I go through this, or he'll just snarkily make fun of me for oversimplifying this as a somewhat scary browser exploit. Dave Burns, Safari is purposely broken. All right, so exploiting indexed DB API information leaks in Safari 15. So I'm gonna this article is phenomenal. The titles are totally appropriate that lead you through understanding how serious this is. So it starts off a short introduction to the IndexedDB API, the IndexedDB leaks in Safari 15. Why is this leak bad? The fact that the database names leak across different origins is an obvious privacy violation. It lets arbitrary websites learn what websites the user visits in different tabs or windows. How many websites are affected? We checked the homepages of Alexa's top 1,000 most visited websites. The results show that more than 30 websites interact with indexed databases directly on their homepage without any additional user interaction or the need to authenticate. Does Safari private mode protect against this leak? In this case, private mode in Safari 15 is also affected by the leak. So if you're in private mode, it's still going to be sharing all of this information. And then they have a demo at safarileaks.com. Once again, safarileaks, all one word, .com. And I wanted to highlight this. So basically, you can go to a website, and that website can look at your entire index of browsing behavior. And most of these websites that are very, very high level and popular, it's just open. It is literally just leaking everything out. How to protect yourself. Let me go back into the screen share here, because this is hilarious. Unfortunately, there isn't much Safari, iPadOS, and iOS users can do to protect themselves without taking drastic measures. One option may be to block all JavaScript by default and only allow it on sites that are trusted. This makes modern web browsing inconvenient and is likely not a good solution for everybody. Moreover, vulnerabilities like cross-site scripting make it possible to get targeted via trusted sites as well, although the risk is much smaller. The only real protection is to update your browser or OS once the issue is resolved by Apple. In the meantime, we hope this article will raise awareness of this issue. This is another one of those core strategies. We talk about Apple. They're so good at the software. This is going to need to be an OS decimal point upgrade. There isn't the same mechanic in iOS to update a part of the OS, a part of the browser. You know, when you get a Chrome update on Android, you get a Chrome update. That's it. You know, like, you don't have to update, you don't have to wait for an OTA for your entire phone to address something that can plug up a massive leak and breach like this. And so what I also want to do, I wish I could just plug in easily, but I don't have a Lightning to HDMI connector that works right now. Hold on, I got to take another drink of coffee here. Okay, so I have my little iPhone SE. This is the only iPhone that I still... I have the two iPhone SEs. The only iPhones that I still care about are the little cheap iPhones. So I opened this up, Safari Leaks, safarileaks.com, but I'm in Firefox. But because of Apple's horrifically restrictive and anti-competitive practices on the iOS platform, the same underpinnings of the Firefox browser are the same as Safari. So you're not really getting much choice or competition. You're basically getting a skin of a browser, but the core code underneath. So I went and I clicked on one of their test links, and your browser currently leaks one database name. We're seeing activity on Bloomberg.com. So their website is able to see the other tabs open in my browser, and they can feed that information back to their own site. So you go to SafariLeaks.com, you're going to see a real practical demonstration of how your browser tabs are not secured. The information on each tab is being shared back and forth because of Apple not doing this right and creating their own sort of controlled pocket of web browser tools and protocols for their own products and services. When that works, it works really well. When Apple breaks from a standard and they make their own walled garden ecosystem solution, often it does improve things for those users. AirTags are a phenomenal service that tie into Apple's entire infrastructure of location data. So for Apple consumers using AirTags, that's a nice perk. But that's anti-competitive. They would never allow a competing product to have the same kind of access, like a Tile location tracker. And now we're seeing, oh, by the way, because they built this with only iOS in mind, it's actually a really scary privacy nightmare for Android users and for people on older iPhones, which are a little more out of date software-wise. So this is a pretty bad one. Again, however, it might be exploited in the wild, we don't know. Whether or not Apple is going to be able to address this quickly, I'm sure they're going to have some type of decimal point OTA. The first story that we're going to get into in the gadget block is also Apple kind of not living up to their promises and commitments. So it's one that we need to kind of get the word out. This is never going to hit the same kind of mainstream media penetration. Like, this isn't going to be a news story you see on the local news. This isn't going to be in the feed of our less tech enthusiast family and friends. But if we don't put the message out there, hey, whatever your browser behavior is, just be careful until we see an update from Apple. Apple's not going to help spread that word, because it makes Apple look bad when a major component of Apple marketing is, we're so good at privacy. They're not. Apple doesn't sell your data. They just give it away for free. So, and yes, good practices, like all Greg, you know, telling family and friends to change their passwords and change their logins. Gary the fireman, make sure to discuss this among your Blue Bubble friends. Oh, poor Blue Bubbles. They just don't even know. Again, they could be on piggybacking on RCS as their fallback, but Apple doesn't want to give them that capability to have better conversations. They make more money by telling teenagers to exclude their classmates who have green bubbles. You see, that's marketing. That it just works. Okay. That wraps up the news block. Quick shout out, quick plug for the subreddit. Every podcast has a subreddit. Mine is no exception. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. I'm a little embarrassed this week because I did so much stuff and it did really well. I need to highlight this. It is not regular that I take such a commanding lead in my own subreddit. Glowing Rectangles is all about sharing content you feel deserves more attention. And I can't help it if my content did well. Because often other people rise to the top of my own subreddit. Matt Tyler is going to be very disappointed in the subreddit results this week. No, Matt is crying. Okay, so number one, my Sony Xperia 5. My Sony Xperia 5 review took the top spot. Now, I just need to show you the number two video did not come from my channel. It comes from this little outlet called reviews.org. They're a great multimedia publication. They've got a number of awesome contributors. And this little video that they published about NFTs, you know, are NFTs a scam? That was the number two video on reddit.com/r/glowingrectangle. So you see, I mean, it's not like it's just some gadget guy. Reviews.org was our number two. For those of you that are just on the audio replay, that was the video that I talked about in my housekeeping. All right, number three, cleaning up my OnePlus 9 Pro Whitestone Dome Premium Screen Protector. And then number four, my Pixel 6 Pro Photography Short. So of the top five videos, I took three of them, and reviews.org took one of them. And then the number five video was Trent's Tech Pixel 6, Pixel 6, Pixel 6. And there's a little, little people fighting, animated kids fighting over a picture of a Pixel 6. So some other videos, we've got an Engadget contribution, the MagSafe DAC. We've got Munchie with 45,000 subscribers, how to root a Pixel 6. We've got the Moto G51 versus Xiaomi Redmi Note 11 on the phone hype. And we've got Geeky Ranjit, 3.2 million subscribers, talking about some really inexpensive earbuds. Looks like a neckband earbuds from Oppo that sell for around $25. So pretty good mix-up of content on the subreddit this week. Once you get out of my complete dominance on the platform. Again, this is all in love. This is a subreddit to try and help promote and to help share. We absolutely need your contributions, your upvotes, your comments, anything we can do to kind of feed a little more SEO energy to content creators that are working really hard out there, putting out some amazing content. And when you really go through the submissions on reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, you're going to see a broader and a more representative slice of techie enthusiasm than what you'll ever get on YouTube's recommendations. If you go to a channel on YouTube with 100 subscribers and they're talking about tech and you click subscribe, the next channel that YouTube is going to recommend is probably going to have 5 million subscribers. YouTube does not wait your desire to find new voices into their algorithm. Every week, I find a new channel that I really wasn't watching before, or I find a new blog or a new writer or a new editorialist that I wasn't hip to, and it's just really shaped the kind of conversations that I want to have. There's more to talk about. There's more to talk about than just endless, Samsung had another update. Apple is going to do this for the iPhone 17. Oh, do you care about the notch? What about S Pen support? There's a whole world of technology outside of Apple versus Samsung in North America, where we don't even really get to talk about the Galaxy A series and how those are often much better phones than the Galaxy S. So, last plug, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Please check it out. Please give it shares and continue just supporting the good work of just numerous, an incredible number of phenomenal and passionate tech content creators who often get underserved by popularity algorithms. So, and again, to Matt's chagrin, hopefully next week, my contributions are more evenly distributed throughout the subreddit. there can only be one. Oh, and Rosted, you're absolutely right. Not only are the A series often better phones, they also still come with chargers. Don't worry, Samsung saw that comment, so we'll make sure to cut that out. So we just recently talked about the Apple Safari leak. That's affecting macOS users, it's affecting iPadOS users, and it's affecting iOS users. So this is one of those opportunities where Apple's recent announcement that they were going to focus on a new initiative of supporting older versions of iOS with security patches is a welcome change. Let's say you're on an older iPhone and you don't want to update to iOS 15, but you don't want to be left out in the cold for security patches. Well, recently, Apple made a bunch of headlines talking about how they were going to start serving older flavors of iOS, starting with iOS 14, but older versions of iOS, just giving them the security patches. That's an excellent move. And especially for all of the advertising and marketing that goes into how long-lived iPhones are because software, that makes sure that consumers aren't left out in the cold and that they also have an upgrade path. Because there's a lot of there's a lot of concern or anxiety about software updates with iPhones, because a lot of people, you go ask your family and friends, everyone still feels like every time I update my phone software, my phone slows down, because Apple did that. They actually did tank performance on products when they would send out new software. So it's with a heavy heart that we have to highlight Apple is going to backtrack on that promise and that commitment. This is coming from 9 to 5 Mac, written up by Philippe Esposito. Apple is no longer letting users stay on iOS 14 with security updates. So I guess that promise or that commitment to supporting older iPhones and making sure they were secure with good software was mostly just a marketing exercise for some good headlines, and now they're ready to force users into new updates. So even before the iOS 15 announcement, 9to5 Mac found out that Apple was working on a new way to deliver alternate security updates to iPhone and iPad users. The company later confirmed that it would offer security patches for iOS 14 to users who weren't ready to upgrade to iOS 15, but it seems that this is no longer the case. So again, Apple got all the goodwill and all of the media attention and all of the writers breathlessly praising these great moves from Apple at a time where, man, doing full OTAs to fix individual component problems in your product is heavy lifting stuff. And are we going to see the same collection of tech reviewers and tech tubers and tech editorialists? Like 9to5 Mac nailed this. I mean, as soon as this kind of went live, this was kind of a major talking point in a few circles of iOS communities. It's getting a little frustrating. Apple can have a keynote, talk about some future setting or some future application or some future perk of their products, take months to deliver it, and they get to benefit from all of the goodwill and the exciting, oh, these new things are going to be so cool, but then they're never really held to task when the reality of it doesn't play out. From the iPhone 11, promising all these amazing camera features, and then it took like 6 months to deliver everything that they promised they were going to deliver. If you bought your iPhone at launch, it was an incomplete product for 6 months until you got everything that they said they would. And here, we know and we hear our community, and we want to support these products the best way that we can, and we're gonna start giving security patches separate from our OTAs, except no, just kidding. And this is the wrong time to backtrack on those kinds of promises. But you know what? There's this massive Safari exploit. Sure would suck if all your data leaked out. I guess you're just going to have to update to iOS 15. Yep. It's the only thing we can do. We're Apple. We're the most profitable, most powerful tech conglomerate on the planet. We have a $3 trillion market cap. There's just nothing we can do. I guess you're just going to have to bite the bullet. I mean, wish we could. Wish we could. Our hands are tied. We just can't deliver our promises. It sucks. We know. We're upset too. We're having a board meeting about it, and Tim Cook and Craig Federici are gonna really furrow their brows about how we couldn't give you what we promised. McCorkran 3. Yeah, I wonder if we're gonna see, you know, tweets from high profile YouTubers distancing themselves from Apple because they can't get their updates in order and they've got massive security problems. You know, it's we see all the doom and gloom whenever there's a minor issue on Android. I'm clearing my voice into the microphone. I'm going to mute here and just
a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
I started Tech Potato with a vision. I'd already been covering processors and technology for 10 years as senior editor for Enantech, but only through the written word. With today's media so diverse, I chose to one-up my vision and move to video and explain the nuance of complex topics. Hi, my name's Ian Cutress and I'm Chief Spud at Tech Potato. The goal at Tech Potato is to have fun, to talk about areas of the technology industry that aren't always covered. Sometimes there are non-obvious aspects to a topic which doesn't always come across in written media, and that's where I strike. The channel is also there to shine a light into the areas that most end users don't even know exist. There's also a tongue-in-cheek joke. Processors are called chips, and just like a bag of chips, I like to get my teeth into these things, hence Tech Potato. The thumbnails are stupid, but the content is real. If you're interested about how things in this technology industry work, or for reports on behind-the-scenes events, plus some classic British humour, then head on over. You'll be welcome with open arms.
Yeah, exactly. So again, the timing is spot on. McCorkran 3 conveniently distancing themselves for it after the holiday season and launch. It's over and right before Samsung releases their next overpriced flagship. You know, the timing is kind of perfect. I'm just saying. Moving right along. This one's making me a little anxious because one of the main things we've been talking about a lot is competition. It's become sort of the soapboxing priority for all of my reviews. I want to talk about products from the perspective of people who might be interested in buying them, not from the perspective of confirming the bias of a larger community of people who already bought something else. One of the things that I'm most excited about as we get into 2022 is in the Android space, some things are going to get broken. But what I'm hoping will eventually happen is a broader market with more competitive solutions. So the Google Tensor as an SoC is a good example of this. When you stray from the established market of Qualcomm components and Qualcomm licensing Qualcomm software, we have to expect not everything is going to go smooth. But if we want the best possible products with bleeding edge tech, excuse me, I cannot get after it. There's like a tickle in the back of my throat. I got water burps now. Super gross. If we want those bleeding edge components to continue improving, they won't if we have fake competition. This is something that happens in the United States a lot. We have the illusion of competition, but we don't have directly competing services. Your internet service provider, you have two companies that you can choose from, and they're roughly the same price. But one is kind of adequate cable and the other is garbage DSL. But that's competition, but it's not. It looks like competition, but you don't really have a choice. You don't really have competing services that are both vying for your money. And so if the competition is Qualcomm SoC or Apple A-Series SoC, then you don't have competition. The solution can never be throw away all of your investment and time and familiarity with one platform and invest in another platform. And anytime an iOS user recommends, well, if you don't like the way Apple does business, you can just leave. That's not someone worth engaging with. That is a lost cause conversation. But at least for your family and friends, you can broach this with a little bit more nuance and a little bit more sincerity. I have family and friends that are locked into iOS. I want them to know how to get the most out of their phones and increasingly how they can keep those phones running longer so they're not constantly flipping super expensive iPhones just to text message with people. Sorry, that was a lot of preamble. It makes me nervous in a time frame of global pandemic, supply issues, distribution issues, and just how difficult it is bringing a product to launch when we see a headline like Samsung no-showed on its major Exynos 2200 launch. And this is coming by way of Ars Technica. Apparently, they also have an update here that I didn't catch when I added this to the show notes. I am no fan of Samsung. I don't like how they do business with their customers. I don't like how they do business with their suppliers. I don't like how they do business as a supplier. And I feel they buy their media attention more than they really earn it. I don't find that their products are inherently any better than competing solutions, and often you can find more specific solutions that easily outperform what Samsung can deliver. I had high hopes for this Exynos, though, that Samsung, as an SoC designer and a fabrication solution, they were partnering with AMD. Knowing the realities of what goes in to making a new processor or a new SoC for a mobile device, we're talking years and billions of dollars of investment to get to a consumer-facing product. So these changes and these designs and what we're seeing today might have been in the pipeline 2 or 3 years ago to then get us to a point where they can deliver. So this isn't like Samsung 6 months ago started making this chip and now they can't do it and we're out that time. We're talking about years of investment leading to this point where a flagship SoC is just not here. And it really does speak to how insanely, I mean, it's an absolute mind-boggling logistics miracle that any pocket computer can make it to market. The unbelievable number of design choices, component choices, software, development, everything that goes into this to then make it into your pocket, and you can just pop your thumb on the screen and get into Reddit and start yelling at people over the internet, is astounding. And one of the things that makes all of these products better is having a choice and being able to vote with your wallet on different features and different products and different services. So when we lose one of those, it's bad for all of us. If you're a fan of Korean design, it's not good that LG left the smartphone market. If you're based in the United States, it's really not good for us that Xiaomi can show how dominant their sales are by completely ignoring the United States. Losing this generation of Exynos with a partnership with AMD, it's better that Samsung doesn't put out a product that's not good, but it should be concerning to us as tech enthusiasts that we're not going to have a leverage point coming from Samsung this year that encourages that competition from Qualcomm. Often the Exynos SoCs, they typically aren't great competitors against Qualcomm, but they stand as a benchmark where Qualcomm can say, we're outperforming our next closest competitor. And that's important. That's critical to keeping Qualcomm on track. This year, we're going to have excellent competition from MediaTek. I'm incredibly excited to see what the new Dimensity could do. But I really wanted to see a four-horse race. I wanted to see a Tensor operating at current spec and current standards coming from Google. I wanted to see the 8 Gen 1 and the Dimensity go head-to-head in that kind of premium smartphone market. And then I wanted to see new blood, a new company in this fight for gaming, AMD, the company behind all of our console chips, beefing up an Exynos exactly at the right time that the Dimensity is scoring super high in terms of graphics. The 8 Gen 1 looks like it can finally catch the Apple A series for gameplay. This was going to be an important move. And so to lose it at the last minute is also disastrous for a number of other industries. Samsung often makes their global version of the phone with the Exynos. That's millions of phones. I am assuming that most of the Galaxy S sales are still going to continue on a downward trend like they have for the last several years. But even if they hold steady from the Galaxy S21, we're talking about tens of millions of phones. Of those, internationally, they're probably going to start using Qualcomm chipsets for this generation, which means Samsung is going to be soaking up the supply of Snapdragon 8 Gen 1s millions more than they would have if they had released an Exynos variant. That means 8 Gen 1s are going to be harder to source for every other manufacturer, especially smaller players. If you want a Sony, if you want an Asus, if you want a Motorola, if you want any of these other players in the smartphone market that don't sell to the saturation point of a Galaxy, it's going to dry up the sales landscape of that SoC. It's not good that Samsung is stumbling on this product. It's going to be a complication point for getting our hands on cool tech across the entire industry. It's going to get rough this year, just as it was rough last year, and it was rough the year before. This is a great time to express to family and friends, maybe you could just take a year off. Hey, is your phone slowing down? Look up some opportunities for a battery replacement. Do you want to buy a new phone for hundreds of dollars, or do you want to spend like $150 and refresh your phone? Get a new screen protector, get a nice new case, wipe it out, start new. I put a new screen protector on my OnePlus 9 Pro, and it's the sexiest this phone has ever looked. It feels like I kind of got a new phone again, and all I had to do was peel off a crap factory-installed TPU screen protector and put on some glass. That's how refreshing some of this stuff can be. I'm very anxious to see how distribution plays out for this year of electronics. Consumer electronics, everything feels like it's going to get even scarcer than it was before. So I want to jump back into this Ars Technica article here real quick, because I didn't read the update. Okay, so from Ars Technica, at around 2 p.m. on January 12th, Samsung finally made a comment. The company told Business Korea, quote, "We are planning to unveil the new application processor at the time of launching a new Samsung smartphone." Samsung did not say which Samsung smartphone would include the unveiling of the Exynos 2200, but everyone assumes that that's the Galaxy S22. Samsung also did not address why it canceled its Exynos event and didn't tell anyone. The spokesperson added, "There are no problems with the AP's production and performance." I need everyone in chat to give me some bossing say. That is such a corporate PR response. That clears up none of this. So I think it could be really interesting too. Let's say they get an S22 out there and it's mostly Qualcomm, or they delay the international S22 launch. Maybe the S22 actually does come to the United States first using Qualcomm hardware, and then there's like a later launch for the international version. Again, there are some other solutions. Maybe they just need this last bit of time. But if I don't know, like, you could have Samsung engineers under video game style crunch trying to solve and fix this issue. You still have to fabricate the chips. It's not like you like, oh, we just push this button, now it's fine and we can go on with production. There are so many logistical elements. So maybe you front load a batch just for North America, and then you can go back and relaunch the S22 with an Exynos chipset. Or maybe it is. It's the Exynos is in line, and all of these leakers, all of these rumors are not on the pulse, and Samsung PR is telling us the truth. It's going to get weird. It's going to get really weird out there. From Aditya Nil, my new toaster is actually using the third gen 1 SoCs instead of the traditionally less efficient heating elements. That's good. That's real good. Again, we could be pulling double duty. Like, maybe instead of reverse wireless charging, your phone can also like heat up your coffee. You know, you just get that Exynos 2200 really going, and you plug in with DeX, and then your coffee gets to the boiling point. Maybe that's what we need, is inductive coffee cups or coffee mugs, so that we can transfer that heat into a liquid more efficiently. See, we're solving problems here. This is brilliant. I love it. So Gabaletta, again, I feel like we're moving parts of this conversation around. So Gabaletta writes, I don't think Samsung is going to be able to fix the issues that are supposedly plaguing the GPU having thermal issues. Power and performance are these sliding metrics. And when we look at what's going on with the 8 Gen 1, it runs really, really hot, but it seems to be able to sustain performance in a way that's more encouraging. And I feel like for a lot of us, we need to get out of what's the upper limit kind of benchmarking, and instead really start trying to focus on what is the sustained performance kind of benchmarking. And, you know, again, if we see a lift in power consumption, but we see an even better rise in sustained performance, that's a good thing. It's easy to throw out just the simple headline, OnePlus throttled the GPU on the OnePlus 9 at launch. You couldn't get more than 60 frames per second, even on games that should have been able to sustain a full 120. But what they did was cap the GPU at a certain tier where you got much longer sustained performance right at 60 FPS. I had a number of games that I like to play that played better on the OnePlus 9 than on the Galaxy S21. The S21 would let the GPU go even hotter, but then the performance would crash. We're in this specs measuring. Let me just whip out my specs and then we can measure it, and then I can put it up on a website and then everything is based on that versus price. But that tells a woefully incomplete part of the story. AMD is pretty good at this stuff, and I think if AMD and Samsung are tag teaming on what kind of measurable performance within a certain power envelope can arrive at a better solution than the generation before, I feel those companies can deliver. Whether or not they actually do is another thing we can't know until we get our hands on these products. But again, a part of this is also just the conversation surrounding an achievable metric versus an actual quality of life improvement. The iPhone 12 was also problematic in this regard too. The iPhone 12 spiked these real big benchmark scores, but sustained performance would often crater below iPhone 11 levels. So if you were into gaming, the first 5 minutes of playing a game, iPhone 12 was better. If you played your game for more than 5 minutes, you were better off sticking to an iPhone 11. But we don't really talk about that. We got all hyped up. Oh, this new Apple A series, it's even more powerful than the one that came before it. You know, like, we're stuck. And if we don't do a better job of properly describing the real world performance of these things, then we're going to keep getting stuck with products that are designed for benchmarkers and not for people who really want to do more with their gadgets. Sorry, that really didn't address your comment, Gabaletta. I just mean, like I said, I'm preaching to the choir here, but it's problematic because we want these things to get better. And right now, they're getting better in ways that I don't think really benefit many people. And that's troubling to me. Dave Burns, no, iPhones are never, ever, ever problematic. Just a quick thing to also keep an eye on. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this one. We all know Meta. We all love Meta and Facebook. Coming by way of Bloomberg, written up by Naomi Nix and Mark Gurman, Meta's Oculus unit faces FTC-led probe of competition practices. Again, we're at the very beginnings. We don't have any word from the FTC, but there are some concerns over... Oculus is now representing, I think, roughly 70 or 80% of all new VR headsets that are being sold. They have an Apple-style, you know, app store. The FTC has been very interested in investigating the business practices of app stores. But one of the major things that they're going to be examining is the hardware sales strategy and whether or not there's an anti-consumer element to grossly underpricing the headset to then ostensibly make up profits on software licensing and development developer costs. So we need to start having another conversation about business practices where you can undercut all of your competitors. You know, HTC can't sell a headset this cheap because they need to profit from the headset. Oculus can sell the headset at a loss because they know Facebook is going to be subsidizing that business model, and then they can try to make it up with consumer data and with software sales. And at some point, we'll need to have an examination of that as a business practice as it pertains to the emerging market of VR services and applications. So keep an eye on it. I still don't own the Oculus Quest. Someone did hook me up with a first generation Oculus Rift. So it's sitting over there in a box because I think they got tired of me complaining about my Acer, my sad little Acer mixed reality headset. So I'm gonna have to see what I can do with this, how it maybe plugs into my Steam library. But my wife saw it, and even though she's super anti-Facebook, she was like, well, if you can figure out how to make it work without doing a whole bunch of Facebook stuff, I really want to start playing Beat Saber again. It's like, okay, I guess I'm in. Let's go check it out. So we'll see. I'll report back. But again, I'm increasingly, if I'm going to spend my money on something, it's not going to be a Quest. I'm becoming such a cranky old man wagging my fist at the heavens. All right. So 10:23 in the AM Southern California time. Who wants to talk about smartphones like the Pixel 6 Pro and the remarkably good patch that just came out for Android 12? If anyone would be interested in chatting about those kinds of experiences, because I feel like we're finally getting in good shape on some of this Android 12 stuff. The OnePlus 9 Pro has been running phenomenally well with only a couple of little minor hiccups. Live caption still doesn't seem to work. They were saying there might have been another update. Well, I'm going to do this live while I wait for the chat to catch up. Updates. Automatic system updates. That's not it. Nope, I still don't have any other update on my OnePlus 9 Pro. So, live captions borked on the OnePlus 9 Pro right now, and that's a bummer for me because I really like live caption. But the camera has been phenomenally faster. The fluidity of the UI has been much more stable. This fixed my issues with Wi-Fi 6. The OnePlus 9 Pro has always been kind of a mediocre performer on my Wi-Fi, and now it's deliciously fast. And so getting into that and then seeing all of the teething pains that we had with Android 12 on Pixels, especially the Google Tensor-powered Pixels, which are fundamentally different hardware than all of the Qualcomm-powered units out there, it really has thrown into kind of stark relief. We're so willing and we're so aggressive about prioritizing some companies with patience, and other companies are just total deal breakers. To kick off part of this conversation, I'm going through different pages in Reddit, and literally, like almost immediately after each other, I'm in the Google Pixel subreddit, and there are people in there complaining about the front-facing camera performance on the Pixel 6. Google has acknowledged that video calling on the Pixel 6 is bugged. It's not working very well. Output is looking really grainy, and the camera quality is significantly lesser than when you're in like WhatsApp or even in Duo. Google Duo video calling. It's acknowledged. We're expecting a fix to come, I think, with the March update. That's a bummer. The next 2 months, you're probably going to have to suffer some mediocre video quality in your video calls. Absolutely appreciate how frustrating that's going to be for people who do a lot of video calling. And especially embarrassing that Google Duo is a fantastic video calling app. And it's a Google software service on a Google phone, not living up to those expectations. That chat is full of Google fails again, can't get anything right, QA is horrible, their developers are awful, this is all garbage. And there was like a pretty decently long conversation about like Google needs to issue a recall for how poorly the Google 6, the Pixel 6 performs. I mean, like, that's the Google community. That's the Pixel subreddit. And it's not an impopular comment to say this is recall worthy, that Google needs to buy these phones back from their customers because it's such a disaster of a smartphone launch. Two Reddit articles later, there's a conversation about the iOS browser bug, right? The Safari browser bug. It's not iOS. It's all Apple products have this Safari bug. And someone breaks down like, yeah, this is broken. This thing in HomeKit is broken. The battery life on this recent update has been garbage. Everybody's agreeing with this like main post that's going through universal control. That whole thing that they teased about like iPad and using this and plugging it into your Mac and your iPhone, that's still 6 months. They teased it 6 months ago, still hasn't arrived. And now we've got a Safari bug that's leaking all of our data. And immediately after, in this iPhone community, it's like, well, we just got to give Apple more time. They'll solve all of these numerous problems. You just need more time. And that seems to echo the general tech trend. If Samsung pulls an update for one of their phones, it's embarrassing, but it's the right thing to do. And they're not turning their customers into beta testers, even though they kind of are, if you think about the same practices of pulling an update. If Apple has to shelve an update or delay a bug fix or a patch, it's the right thing to do. Apple's really thinking about their customers and their consumers. OnePlus pulls an update, and it's the most toxic, racist, anti-Chinese rants you've ever seen. Google pulls an update, and the sky is falling. We need to issue a recall for this phone, and it's immediate, and it's severe. And it's just so sad in our community of enthusiasts, like on those lines, it's like you can draw like a political graph and a chart and you can see like, well, these companies sell a lot. So everything they do, we just got to be more patient. If they make a mistake, it's understood. This stuff is complicated. You want to get the right thing out to the right people and have the better product at the end of the day. But Google, OnePlus betrayed all of their customers, even though they're selling more than they ever have in the company's history. That's obviously the wrong way to do this. And it's such a warped and algorithmically influenced view of the tech landscape. But you can see it immediately. If you subscribe to a bunch of tech subreddits, it's almost perfect. It's almost perfect. You can see, like, this is a community that was built on a smaller smartphone player. Everything in there sucks. This is an iPhone community. Well, we've got some frustrations, but what are we going to do? Switch to a garbage Android where Google sells all your data? Well, that would never happen. So they just stick with it. And it's hilarious and sad all at the same time. Yeah, Tiger Cam. It's like everything else in life. The popular generally get more slack than anyone else. Well, in the United States. So this is from a Corcoran 3. It's like people want all the competition to Apple and Samsung to just crumble and die. I feel like internationally, BBK brands and Xiaomi brands represent phenomenal competitive choices that we just do not have access here. And again, when I pick up something like, is this it? No. Is this it? No. I have way too many little, rectangles on my desk right now. Like a TCL. I pick up this is the TCL 20. I pick up this phone and it reminds me of how beautifully constructed, the LG Velvet was. And it's really nice. And if you were to show up at a low-cost carrier, like a Boost Mobile, and walk out with one of these phones, that would be lovely. You can pick up like a OnePlus N10, like free, for re-upping a contract on a lot of these low-cost carriers. That is a brilliant phone to have for free. You start seeing some of those players. Like the resurgence of Motorola in the entry-level game coming almost exclusively from LG leaving the smartphone market. know, LG left and Samsung didn't pick up much of their customer base. A huge surge happened last year, at the end of last year, on Motorola's. I have some issues with Motorola's update strategy, but again, for a cheap or low-cost phone, especially here in the United States carrier market where you get that for free oftentimes, they're not bad phones for free. Like, that's pretty good. I'm not breathing through my teeth making a cringe face if one of my friends just wants an ultra-cheap smartphone plan and a basic communicator, they could do way, way worse. So anyway, rambling, digressing, back to the point. Android 12, finally starting to find its footing. I did not realize just how fundamentally different Android 12 was as an update. And so far, I've had pretty good experiences. I had more of my teething pains going from Android 10 to Android 11. But going from Android 11 to Android 12 on phones like the OnePlus 9 Pro, not that bad. Obviously, still plenty of things that we need to fix, that we need to address. I've got my Pixel 6 here, fingerprint sensor. I feel like it is working a little bit more consistently. But I also feel like this is kind of the conversation point that we need to have about things like in-display fingerprint sensors. If it really came down to what I think the best biometric security solution is, a power button or a rear fingerprint sensor is always going to be better than an in-display one. So now I feel like the Pixel 6 has become a more consistent performer. It's not working for me right now that I'm trying to do this on camera. But it's always going to be less than, like, you know, if I've got, where did I put it? Like, so here's like a Xiaomi, my Mi 11i. This fingerprint sensor is shockingly fast and super aggressively accurate that as I'm pulling this phone out of my pocket, where my thumb just naturally rests, I don't even need to train any muscle memory. It's just how you hold the phone. It's on and ready to go. And no in-display fingerprint sensor can mimic that. In fact, it's so good, it's disappointing when you pick up a phone like the Mi 11 Ultra, and there's this in-display sensor that is so much more deliberate, and you have to think about where your thumb lands on a completely surfaceless piece of glass, featureless piece of glass, not surfaceless. There's a surface there. It's just that kind of psychology. So for me, the Pixel 6 fingerprint sensor wasn't bad. It was just kind of mid-pack. It was a little pokey. It was a little inconsistent. Sometimes I'd have to, like, double scan. That happens. It was way better than, like, the last generation of cheap phone in-display fingerprint sensors. But, of course, you could point to a phone that had a better in-display fingerprint sensor. So, obviously, Google was complete and total garbage. It's lesser than this other one phone, and that's the kind of comparison that we have. There's one winner, and everything else is garbage. And often that winner isn't picked by some kind of objective assessment of performance. It's picked more by who sold the most, because then you can say nice things to those people, and they'll watch more of your videos, and you'll make more money. Yeah, from 2 Turbo, what do we even gain from an in-display fingerprint? Literally nothing. A side fingerprint sensor will have the same accessibility. I would argue that a side fingerprint sensor has even better accessibility. We look at people who might be somewhat visually impaired. You've got to find, like, where to put your thumb and then just memorize how you hold the phone to where your thumb lines up with that, as opposed to a tactile landmark, like a dimple on the back of the phone, or a power button that will also achieve that same functionality, is a more ergonomically accessible solution for a broader community of people who might have potential issues. Those are better for people with some kind of impairment, and they also improve the situation for everybody else. I'm trying to think. Like, I cannot think of any benefit to an in-display fingerprint sensor other than it might help the construction of the phone for how you have to move parts around. you probably don't want to do a rear fingerprint sensor on a phone with such a ridiculous camera stack. You know, so the big visor of cameras where your finger would go is probably too close to that camera module for it to be effective in how you also have to balance all of the other internals on the phone. But that to me is why power button fingerprint sensors have become such welcome additions. On Sony's, on Xiaomi's, they're really good. And I love them. I don't like them. I love them. So, performance has been really good. Pixel 6 Pro. Now that we have this big update, I'm going to be going out to shoot my real camera samples for my camera deep dive. So hopefully that'll be out in about 2 or 3 weeks. I have a lot of shooting that I need to do, and I want to compare back and forth. There's always been just some like little gremlin-y things in the Pixel 6 camera, especially when it comes to stuff like noise processing. Not for photos, but more for video. And I think a lot of people would kind of vibe with Pixel video has gotten significantly better, but it still often feels like a half step or a generation behind some of the best video shooters out there. There's something about texture and grain on the Pixel 6 video before the update that made it feel just a little smeary or a little splotchy. And so if anything algorithmically has been fixed, I hope it's that. But what I also think is kind of interesting is we're seeing those subtle Google tweaks where I feel like Google developers are starting to figure out this SoC a little bit better. I'm not going to do a whole standalone video on this update for the performance testing that I do, but I am going to be mentioning it in a future video when I kind of come back to looking at this. Tensor, they're finding these little pockets of performance that we didn't get at launch. So when it came to the Pixel 5, one of the first big major updates, we got like a 15% bump to GPU performance. And that was kind of huge for the Pixel 5 having that mid-ranger processor. The Pixel 6, this update, I'm eking out almost a 10% bump in GPU performance, not just in Geekbench. Like, I can play games and I can literally see the FPS counter is about 4 or 5 frames per second higher than where it was before the update. One of the good ones, I've been replaying Titan Quest. So the ultimate edition of Titan Quest. It's a beautiful top-down Diablo-esque dungeon looter action RPG kind of a game. And that game is now playing, unless I'm in a heavy boss battle where the boss spawns other enemies, I'm hitting over 100 frames per second on Titan Quest. I wish I could go back in time to when Titan Quest was a new game that would make my gaming PC struggle and show them, here's this pocket computer that you're going to have in the future that can play this at 100 frames per second on a screen that dynamically adjusts to the frame rate of the content and can hit 120 FPS. This is what you just casually take for granted as a basic communicating device. And here it is, just absolutely destroying this game. I mean, just glorious, glorious performance bump. Often, in Titan Quest before that update, I'd hit like low 90s. So I'm seeing an even better increase than what the sort of, you know, benchmarking would point to. I went from like low 90s to low 100s. And that's even better than, I mean, if I did the math on the section and the playthrough that I like to just sort of play around with for that kind of performance testing, it's closer to like a 12% bump, which ain't nothing to sneeze at with one software update, which is pretty cool. Outside of that, not a lot of other things have really changed up too dramatically. PowerDirector support is still remarkably shaky, so my video editing and rendering tests aren't great. We finally got PowerDirector updated and finally supported the Tensor so that we could do 4K rendering, and now it's borked again. So I'm trying to do that. It's something about Android 12 and PowerDirector has to sort of like manually whitelist some of these updates And whatever they're using as an encoder isn't working very well. So I'm having issues with PowerDirector on my Pixel 6. I'm having issues with PowerDirector on my OnePlus 9. I really hope LumaFusion will give us Luma Touch on Android soon. I maybe tagged them on another public tweet just saying, hey, guys, Android users, we want your software.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
So, overall, there's still a ways to go. Android 12 needs a little bit more seasoning, and I don't think that's a controversial statement to make. There's so much under the hood changes. This is one of the largest and most substantial Android operating system updates that we've ever seen. And I think that that goes hand in hand with a certain amount of a certain expectation on what these products can do and how they should be supported. You know, right now we're on iOS 15.2. Have we hit the .2 update for iOS? So even in Apple land, if Apple just worked, we wouldn't see as much activity for OTAs. These things are constantly moving targets that need to be assessed with a fluidity of what the real life situation is in using them. And my experiences on the Pixel 6, I haven't experienced anything so disastrous that I still wouldn't recommend a Pixel to someone that I think would fit that Google flavor of Android well. For most of my family and friends, it's more of a budget discussion where a Pixel 5a makes more sense for their actual practical needs. But if someone wanted to own a nicer phone with a nicer camera, a nice little camera camera upgrade, the Pixel 6 still remains on my list as a strong recommendation, so long as that person is really assessing the needs and wants. So long as they're looking at what they want and they're looking at their budget, I think the Pixel 6 Pro is brilliant. I think it's a phenomenal upgrade path. But again, it's much harder to kind of convey that. It's much harder to get into that discussion and share that with individuals in the tech community, because we're so primed for a winner or loser comparative battle that I don't think should exist in a tech review. So if I say something nice about a OnePlus 9 Pro, and then I also say something nice about a Xiaomi, well, which one should you buy? And the answer is the one that fits your needs. So if I make my video about the OnePlus 9 Pro, and I'm talking to people who might be interested in buying the OnePlus 9, then I'm largely going to have positive things to say about it. If you're into the OnePlus vibe, then the OnePlus is the most OnePlus phone you can buy. You know, I don't go into iPhone reviews saying, but you should instead buy Samsung, because I know that's not really very productive. But in Android land, we kind of think all Android, so there must be one bestest Android, and that's the only one that's worth recommending. And if you recommend another one, you're probably talking about a compromised device. So when I see like a massive channel or, you know, someone with a lot more visibility talking about like, well, I'm going to put this phone down because it's not worth it, and I'm going to pick up a popular phone instead, it doesn't feel like that's an individual that's really living with and using these products. It doesn't feel to me like that's a commentary that's informed by the real life usage of these different things. I mean, we see the incredible number of patches that have come out for the Galaxy S21 on Android 12. I don't think this fold that I'm borrowing from TK, I don't think it has Android 12 yet. I need to check again. I've been checking every other day just to see if and when this Fold 3 will finally get Android 12. And Samsung had to pull the update for that. If I sit and use and live with a Xiaomi, there are these wonderful pros and cons. And a massive part of, like, because I've been going back, I'm going to do a Is It Worth It in 2022 for the Poco F3. This is a brilliant solution. It is the let's make a sort of cheap car, but put a big old engine in it kind of a phone. Like, that's awesome, right? There's a hot rod mentality to a Poco that doesn't exist in a lot of other phones. There's a unique collection of pros and cons to that where I can't recommend a Poco to someone who might instead prefer using a TCL. Maybe the better build quality and the different features on a TCL are going to appeal more to that individual than they might for the Poco F3. It's that, you know, really trying to work back and forth and say, like, there's something unique, celebrate what actually is unique about that product, not what about that product is different than a Samsung, and that's why we can say Samsung is the winner. And I find increasingly that's where I have problems with other techies and reviewers. I am way behind on the chat. Gabaletta. But Juan, Google should have just made the phone that great on day one. Again, I mean, like, every single time techies start speculating on the possible in the gadget industry, they're almost universally wrong. To me, it's the hilarity of, like, you know, Microsoft should have just made the cameras flush. And you're like, sure, but apparently you don't understand optical physics and you call yourself a techie. Okay, that's great. You know, Google needs to make the bestest software perfect from day one, but you'd never hold that against Apple. Anyone who says something like, oh, well, I mean, I call out Apple too. I'm keeping it a buck. And that's, you know, I'm just as hard on Apple as I... No, you're not. Lindsay and Barry Johnson. Likewise, Juan, my wife is the opposite of technical, and she is using a Pixel 6. It's such a good smartphone bargain. The Pixel 6 is such a monster competitor in that price point. I mean, I just can't say enough nice things about it. I'm the camera nerd in the family, so I want that telephoto. And to me, the telephoto all by itself is worth every penny of price increase going from the 6 to the 6 Pro. But I cannot put that on anyone else. And Gabaletta also backing him up. The Pixel 6 strikes that balance between premium and cost. Barry. No, Juan, I want a winner. Let's just say the OnePlus 9 wins it all. Barry, you're such a OnePlus shill with your Pixels and your Xiaomis. See, and Simon, this is what I want techies to come back to. Again, the joy of this. We are blessed that there are so many great phones available at every price bracket. That's what healthy competition should look like. And we should be celebrating the competitive points and the differences, not making every review an implied winner-loser comparison against a phone that we know generates more ad revenue on YouTube. I mean, so, and I'm purposely, because again, I really don't enjoy the toxic back and forth when, so again, I did this once where I called out specifically a YouTuber and broke down all of the disingenuous elements of one of their reviews. And then I recently did something a little similar with a very large tech publication that's got a reputation for sort of leaning in a certain direction in what products they tend to review more highly than others. And whenever that happens, or the few times that I've actually specifically hard targeted one individual for that part of the conversation, what ultimately happens is it just gives that in, that creator or that tech publication more exposure. More people go running out there to go and see what they wrote or the video that they made. It popularizes their platform. And then the discussion becomes two YouTubers have beef instead of practically examining the most toxic trends in our community. And so, obviously, I am referencing some very specific commentary on phones like the Pixel 6 and the OnePlus 9, but I feel they're endemic. I feel those are examples of the larger lazy trends in reviewing, and I'd rather spend more of our time highlighting how gamed our reviews are. Every manufacturer is playing reviewers right now. That's how gamed this market is. And some people are really good at playing ball and leaning into that and profiting extremely well off of those kinds of business practices. And I feel that often comes at the expense of the greater community's conversations and the ability to educate and how we talk about these products. I don't feel that's one individual. I feel that is a large tech trend that needs to be examined with almost every piece of consumer electronics that we can talk about, that I get my hands on to review. It's a media literacy issue to where we put our sort of trust, or we put our attention, where we vote with our wallets, or where we vote with our time. If I single out one person and I do a reaction to their video, all I'm going to do is give them more traffic. All I'm going to do is enrich their standing in the algorithm. All I'm going to do is make their commentary even more valuable. And I don't want to do that. I want us to, you know, if someone's kind of trolling and punching down on smaller smartphone brands that are making good products, we need to ignore them. I can point out the trend, we can point out how lazy the reviews are, but if we send them more traffic, if we give them more comments, if we give them more thumbs ups and thumbs downs, and we agonize over that on Reddit, and then we turn it into beef between individual reviewers, that doesn't improve the quality of the conversation. It demonstrably makes the quality of the conversation about gadgets worse. So I'm sensitive to just like naming names, because it's not one name. Everyone who's playing that game is playing that game to enrich their own channel in ways that are profitable through the algorithm. And I don't want to do that. And I don't want us to do that. And I want us to be better about that. Simon says, Hypno, who is the winnerest of all the phones, Apple or Samsung? Sorry, that was also long-winded of me. I want to get back to these comments and... Oh, 2 Turbo. I wish I'd been able to get my hands on one sooner, closer to the launch. When Unihertz can fit the headphone jack, micro SD slot, IR blaster, and the Tiny Jelly 2, why can't other larger companies? Oh, they can. They just won't make as much money. There you go. Aditya, two YouTubers have beef. Juan con carne. I was actually just looking up shredded beef recipes. I need to do like some shredded beef. Maybe we're trot out the crock pot. Just let that slow. Just let that meat just fall off the bone and get them flavors. Lots of salt. Dave Burns, SGG long-winded? You don't say. So while we're kind of just wrapping up the last 10 minutes here, I do want to highlight last week we had I didn't bring the box in. Do I have my box up on the shelf? I do. All right, this is an example box. This isn't the actual product that I'm giving away. This is the one that I used for a review. And so this is the Eco OH2. Now, the one I'm keeping are the green ones, because the green ones are super, super sassy. But last week, I published on somegadgetguy.com that I was going to give a pair of these away. The OH2s are excellent. I think they're hilarious because Eco, they... people who are into like these kinds of earbud conversations and in-ear monitors, they may be like, these are the bassiest earbuds that Eco have ever put out. So I get them and I'm thinking like, man, these are going to be like skull rumblers. Eco's focus on like highs and detail and clarity, these are the bassiest earbuds that Eco has ever put out. To me, they sound closer to like reference. They're not flat. I mean, I'm not saying that they're flat, but I just thought it was funny, you know, like the perception. If you were really into this one brand, oh my gosh, they're so bassy now. Kinda. So Eco sent over a trio. I'm going to be giving one away a week. So next week, we're going to do another giveaway for the OH. No, next week, another member of the SGG community has some other headphones to give away, which is going to be a surprise. I'm going to tease that now. But this week, if you go to somegadgetguy.com, and then I also accepted one contest entry from someone who shared links on the Patreon. Now, that person did not follow the rules completely, but they did follow the rules for sharing what they were supposed to share, so I'm still going to count it. But they didn't win anyway. So the winner of the drop, hold on, let me just go in because I want to show you. These are really nice premium in-ear monitors. It was a very easy contest to enter. You had to share a link to the original review. And I just want to, we're going to go into last week's podcast. And we had five replies, Awangulas, Will Stamper, and David Burns. So the winner is David Burns. It was specifically this Reddit link that he shared. Of five contest entries, I drew the number five on random.org. So Dafe, I'm going to be sending these your way. If you want to, because you're on the Discord too, if you just want to shoot me your address and info where you want them shipped and stuff. But, you know, the drawing was one out of five. So, again, I'm not really highlighting this contest as a way to just get a bunch of contest junkies to follow me on Twitter. Next week, we're going to have another incredible pair of headphones to give away. They are wireless and interesting to use in a way that I don't think a lot of consumers have experienced, which if you know me, you probably have a pretty good guess on what brand I might be giving away then. We're gonna kind of alternate. So I want to do 1 week is the contest. Next week is the winner, where I'm not trying to back, you know, all of these up back to back to back. And then following that, we've got more OH2s to give away. I cannot say enough nice things about Eco as a label. I've genuinely enjoyed every single audio product I've ever gotten my hands on from them. They make a great DAC. They make great IEMs and earbuds. They're premium tier components. They're really, really good stuff. So coming up next, we're going to be giving away something else. So some really, really good times. And again, that box was open. All of these things have been sealed. I'm not giving away earbuds that I've tested. I feel that would be phenomenally gross. So stay tuned. Thank you, everybody who participated, Will and David and Awangulas. I think that might be Boing Bite, but I don't know for certain. So wrapping this all up. Yes, all Greg, you indeed. There are so many products that are like, I cannot give these away because they have interacted with my biology in an intimate fashion. That's super gross. And yes, Simon says, Hypno, you are the winnerest, Dafe Burns. You did it. You got the touch. So, folks, wrapping this podcast up right on time. Look at me. This is like the third week in a row I've managed to stick the two-hour landing. I'm very proud of myself here. And again, for an incredible amount of news links and articles and things like that, I'm kind of feeling like maybe I don't know. So, I mean, I'm looking at the calendar, how about we say this? So the next week is the 24th, and then there's January 31st. As we get into the last podcast of the month, what if we made those the more regular pajama podcasts? Like, we actually made the format of the show. We'll go a little bit lighter on news. We'll go a little bit lighter on links. And that way we can just spend more of our time. Like, if you want me to set up two camera, I can do more hands-ons. If you've got specific questions about individual phones, like on my desk right now, hold on. I just want to try and show this. If I just keep stacking the phones on my desk, this is the kind of ridiculous workflow I'm trying to accomplish with reviewing products and services and accessories and trying to, I'm getting to that point where I might start dropping them. I've got two more, and the last one's going to be TK's Fold. Can I stick the landing and not drop thousands of dollars of smartphones? Ha ha! So that's super gross. We can dig more into the actual conversations about all of these and answer specific questions. If I want to kind of rip off the style of TK's show where it's all just back and forth, why don't we plan on that? Last podcast of the month can be our pajama podcasts where it's all just Q&A conversations, and wherever the conversation goes, we'll just follow that. If that sounds like a good idea, real quick, just drop a one in chat. Ready, go. I'm gonna drink some water while you do that. So Gabaldette is down for it. We might just follow his lead. There we go. All right. Okay. So that's our plan. Next week, normal show, new contest, new giveaway. 31st, put it on your calendars now, folks. Pajama podcast, where we just sit and chill and chat. Very, very low-key, very, very off-the-cuff kind of conversation. Bring your tech questions, and I'll bring my tech answers, and I think we'll have a grand old time. So, Trey nailed it, leaving a Juan in the chat. I said drop a one. Oh, Gadget Guy 2020 actually beat him to it. Okay, so there were a couple people using my name as a pun. That makes me very happy. I will also accept Obi-Wan Kenobi. So, folks, let's put a pin in this one. Thank you so much, everybody. This was just a brilliant and a fun way to kick off my week. I know it was a holiday, so I'm very grateful. I'm very thankful to everyone who wanted to spend a couple hours just geeking out with me on a day of celebration and remembrance and of being proactive in the challenges facing all of our various communities. You're exactly the kind of people I love hanging out with, because I know that you all kind of live a part of this in your daily lives anyway. You know, not just sitting back and waiting for things to happen in our circles, but being proactive about contributing to some of these solutions and at least these conversations. And just a huge thank you to Gary the Fireman, Anod032, and Adriana and Whip. Just such incredible support. Thank you so much. It means the world to me to find people that not only want to engage with these conversations, but are stepping out to support these kinds of conversations. So, folks, we're going to be back next week. Another normal format show, another contest, another giveaway. SomeGadgetGuy.com for all the show notes and information, everything, every way that you can subscribe. That's a recent initiative on the YouTube channel, too. So if you go to somegadgetguy.com/subscribe, I also have RSS links for my video playlists. So if you'd like a better way to get notifications on what's going down on this channel, or you only want to subscribe to specific content of mine, like let's say you only want my headphone reviews, you can do that. You can put together your own Some Gadget Guy playlist, put it in a podcast app, put it in an RSS feeder, and you'll get much better notifications than smashing that bell icon. It's everything I can do to try and make this a more personal and interactive conversation than just letting YouTube control every way that we consume our media. I'm going to be back next week. Thank you so much. Folks, I want you to take care of yourselves. It's still crazy out there. I know, like, you know, the East Coast just got hit with another snowstorm. We're dealing with year two of an evolving pandemic. There's definitely a lot of uncertainty in the job market, the distribution market, the tech market. Our hobby is just getting it from all sides. But I also know that you're exactly the kind of people that are going to be leaders in your own communities to try and make this better for other people out there. So take care of yourselves so you can keep fighting the good fight for everybody else too. I'll catch you back here next week. Take care, be safe, be well, eat some good food, hang out with some people who care about you. I'll catch you back here next week. I love you all.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.